This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, and we'll get to Medal of Honor Monday here in a second. We're going to talk about Democrat voters getting what they voted for. We're going to talk about the Lake and Riley Act, ESG, emails, all kinds of spending stuff, so much more coming up still on the Jesse Kelly Show, but it is Monday. Start of the second hour on Monday, so you know what time it is. What time is it?
Medal of Honor Monday time. We take a Medal of Honor citation every Monday at this time, and we read it. That's it. And the one I'm about to read, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you've probably heard before. We've done this one before. It's famous because it's so amazing. I have done background on this before, but I'm going to do a little bit more background now to the point where I might not even get to the citation this segment. I'm going to try to. It depends on how long I go. So just stay with me. I need to give you a little more background. I think it helps explain some things. As the Marines and the U.S. Army tore through the Pacific, island hopping campaign, you know it. They were trying to get closer and closer to Japan in World War II. You know all this. You listen to the show. We talk about it all the time. And what are they really doing? What's the island hopping campaign? It's an airbase hopping campaign. The islands are air bases. We want to move our bombers and our fighters who escort the bombers. We need to move them closer and closer to mainland Japan so we can bomb mainland Japan into submission. That is the goal of the island hopping campaign. And there are many, many, many terrible battles in the Pacific War. As far as battles that have mentally destroyed men, this one in Saipan is way up on the list for a couple different reasons. And one of them is going to have a direct thing to do with our story today. The first one doesn't have anything to do with our story. The suicides. This is actually going to have, well, you'll see the tie-in in a moment. Saipan is famous. Maybe you've even seen video of this. Video and pictures exist. It's hard to watch. I wouldn't recommend it. But on the northern part of the island, there are cliffs. Tall cliffs. Supposed to be beautiful. And by video, by picture, they are beautiful. These huge 400-foot cliffs that overlook the ocean, that overlook rocks down below in the ocean. And Saipan is famous for, as the Marines approached, as the Army approached, the civilians, this is one of the very first islands where we encountered real Japanese civilians, the civilians were jumping. Not only were they jumping to their deaths, they were throwing their own children to their deaths. And this is one, if you read the accounts from the Army guys, the Marine guys who watched them do this, these are hardened men who were just stone cold killers by now. And they would weep, begging them to stop over the microphone. Please stop. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt your kid. One story, I'll never forget it. One story was, there was a Marine and he carried this with him the rest of his life. You want to talk about unique regrets that come from combat? I just couldn't even imagine living with this. He was up there by the cliffs and they're trying to get everyone to stop jumping. And a father comes out with his wife and their children. And the father proceeds to throw all of his children over the cliff. His son, especially his youngest son, was like 4 or 5, was very unwilling. And dad had to rip him off of his leg and threw him off a cliff and then bowed with his wife and they both dove to their deaths. The dad actually didn't die right when he hit the water or whatever. It didn't matter. But the Marine talks about how much he regretted the rest of his life. He says, hey, if I'd have just shot the dad, I could have saved that entire family if I'd shot him right away. But he didn't know what to do, right? What do you do? So Saipan's famous for that. But why would they do that? This is going to come into our Medal of Honor Monday thing and our citation thing. Japanese society had been militarized and brainwashed for years leading up to World War II. Really, really, really bad. Look, some ways it's really cool, right? But obviously when you do that to your society, it can get very, very twisted and bad. By the time the Marines and the Army showed up on Saipan, they had convinced every Japanese citizen there that the Marines were going to torture and rape and murder every civilian they came across. And they had specific ways they had told their civilians the Marines would do this. He's going to cut your ears off. And it was really, really ugly stuff. And the Japanese knew these were lies. They knew that's not how the Marines did things. It's never been how the Marines have done things. It's never been how the Army's done things. They knew it was lies. We talk all the time about living in a world of make-believe, right? Yet they told that to their people over and over and over again, that by the time the Marines got there, you're a father looking at your wife and your kids. You feel like your choice is an honorable death going over the cliff or to be mutilated horribly by the Marines and watch a whole battalion have their way with your wife. You're probably going to pick the more extreme example. And that's why they did what they did. But the jumping at the cliffs actually took place after when our Medal of Honor citation was earned. And sadly, this is not the only Medal of Honor citation that was earned during this very famous event on Saipan. So here was the deal. We landed on Saipan. The Marines and the Army landed on Saipan, divided up duties, and began to fight their way through Saipan. And Saipan was a freaking nightmare for a variety of reasons. The Japanese had had the thing fortified. They knew what they were doing. There was an army division there that was, they get dogged on now historically, and they did perform very, very poorly compared to the two Marine divisions that were there, but it's not really a fair comparison. The Marine divisions were these hardened combat units. The Army division was very inexperienced, basically a bunch of reservists. It was not fair what happened to them, but they got bogged down. They ended up in this horrible, bloody valley. It was just, Saipan was really, really ugly. But the good news is we eventually seized the airfield on the south of the island. That was the goal, remember. And that allowed us to use our planes to take care of the rest of the island. So I just want you to picture this. We have formed a line. Marines and Army have formed a line on the southern part of the island, and they're marching this horizontal line north and pushing the Japanese back north, right? So we're crowding all the Japanese troops and all the civilians to the northern part of the island. You with me so far? You with me? Well, we had a problem. In fact, we had two gigantic problems. One was our fault. The other we couldn't really do anything about. The first fault of ours was there was an Army unit, and I'm not dogging on the Army like I'd normally like to have fun doing, because the Army was incredible in World War II. They really were, especially in the Pacific. They really were. Should be very proud of them. But this Army unit made a gigantic screw up. You remember how I told you there was a line? You want to form a defensive line? Well, they were told they needed to get on a certain part of this line. And then the unit commander decided he didn't like that part, so he was going to move a little bit in. So he didn't have his part of the line quite as covered as it should be covered. In fact, it was pretty naked. Now, hindsight's 20/20. He didn't know what was coming. Maybe you could argue the military should have known what was coming. But he didn't know what was coming. Now, the reason they maybe should have known is whenever they would capture somebody, a Japanese civilian, or in a very rare case, a Japanese soldier, they almost never went alive, or a Korean soldier, they were being used as slaves. They kept capturing these guys who kept telling them, hey, I'd be ready on July 7th. Hey, July 7th is going to be a bad day for you. I'd be ready. And they kept warning them, and they were all, what's coming on July 7th? I don't understand what's coming. And they would say, they're all going to come at you. Everybody. They're going to come at you on July 7th. They knew the date. They should have known the date because it was told to them, and they knew it was going to be a charge of some kind. What they didn't fully grasp was the 4,000 or 5,000 Japanese civilians and military alike who were still there were starving. They were running out of ammunition quickly, and they wanted to die. And what happened next, where this Medal of Honor earned, was one of the most horrifying things I've ever heard about in combat. When I read the individual stories on it, my jaw drops. I couldn't imagine seeing it, living through it. Many people did not. But we'll talk about what happened and how at least one gentleman acquitted himself in a moment. Before we get to that, might be a lot to handle. After all, it's an ugly story. So make sure you got your chalk flowing through you and you'll be fine. Look, if you're too sissified to handle these stories, no, I'm kidding. Just get some chalk in you. Get your T levels up, gentlemen. And ladies, let me talk to you for a moment. They have a female vitality stack. It's a special formula for you. We have so many women who've taken it and they email all the time. What I hear more than anything from ladies is how much energy they have late in the day now. 3, 4 in the afternoon, you're hitting that wall, but it's time to take care of the kids, make dinner, and they're just ready to go. Chalk.com. All natural herbal supplements. So many options for you. Whatever you're looking for, go look at what they have. You have questions, ask them questions. And take advantage of the Mega March discount, all right? CHOQ.com, promo code Jesse. Chuck.com, promo code Jesse.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday with all kinds of things in the news. So, of course, we're talking history on Medal of Honor Monday, which I'm getting to the citation in a moment. So I just gave you a bit of lead up, a very minor bit of lead up to Saipan in the night of July 7th. All you need to know for our purposes for the Medal of Honor citation is on that night, we will never know the exact number. 4,000, 5,000, those are the numbers that are normally given. 5,000 Japanese troops and civilians, fixed bayonets. Many of them just had sharpened sticks. Many had swords. But and they took all the ammo they had, which was not a bunch, but they had some. Sticks, swords, bayonets, and they charged. If you read Marine stories from right before they charged, they could tell something was coming. There was a lot of singing, kind of this melancholy singing coming from the Japanese lines. It sounds like something out of a horror movie, to the point they could tell they were drunk, and they could tell they were doing a ceremony of some kind. They knew something was coming. And then 5,000 suicidal, angry Japanese. They do the largest and last bonsai charge in World War II. And it doesn't matter how many machine guns you have set up. You cannot stop a human wave attack of 5,000 people where they're trying to die. And remember I told you about that gap in the line? The Japanese knew where that gap was. They'd done some probing in the lines, and they just went blowing right through the American lines. And soon they're back there with our artillery weapons. Our artillery guys are supposed to be behind the lines. They found themselves in hand-to-hand combat with Japanese troops with swords. Eventually, as you can imagine, remember, once they blow through your lines, there's nothing stopping them. They found themselves in our medical tents, in our command facilities,
And now you understand what was going on when dentist and surgeon Benjamin Louis Salomon was trying to fix up his troops on Saipan, July 7th, 1944.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, Captain Ben L. Salomon was serving at Saipan in the Mariana Islands on July 7, 1944 as the surgeon for the 2nd Battalion, 105th Infantry Regiment, 27th Infantry Division. The regiment's 1st and 2nd Battalions were attacked by an overwhelming force estimated between 3,000 and 5,000 Japanese soldiers. It was one of the largest attacks attempted in the Pacific Theater during World War II. Although both units fought furiously, the enemy soon penetrated the battalion's combined perimeter and inflicted overwhelming casualties. In the first minutes of the attack, approximately 30 soldiers walked, crawled, or were carried into Captain Salomon's aid station, and the small tent soon filled with wounded men. As the perimeter began to be overrun, it became increasingly difficult for Captain Salomon to work on the wounded. He then saw a Japanese soldier bayoneting one of the wounded soldiers lying near the tent. Firing from a squatting position, Captain Salomon quickly killed the enemy. Then, as he turned his attention back to the wounded, two more Japanese soldiers appeared in the front entrance of the tent. As these enemy soldiers were killed, four more crawled under the tent walls. Rushing them, Captain Salomon kicked the knife out of the hand of one, shot another, and bayoneted a third. Captain Salomon butted the fourth enemy soldier in the stomach, and a wounded comrade then shot and killed the enemy soldier. Realizing the gravity of the situation, Captain Salomon ordered the wounded to make their way as best they could back to the regimental aid station while he attempted to hold off the enemy until they were clear. Captain Salomon then grabbed a rifle from one of the wounded and rushed out of the tent. After four men were killed while manning a machine gun, Captain Salomon took control of it. When his body was later found, 98 dead enemy soldiers were piled in front of his position. Captain Solomon's extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army. And he gave his life for his country. Before I get to emails, before I get to Democrats cheating in elections, I'll probably get to that next. I've done that Medal of Honor citation before, but I realize I didn't give whatever. I've never given any of the background on Salomon, and I've never talked in any more detail about exactly what he did that day. I'll just give you a couple little things next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, just to finish up Medal of Honor Monday, and then we're going to get to everything else. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Love, hate, death threats, the works.
Couple more things on Ben Salomon. Whenever we do that Medal of Honor citation, we always talk about him being a dentist and a surgeon by trade. And while that's kind of true, it doesn't really capture who Ben Salomon was. You see, Ben Salomon was a killer who happened to be good at dentistry and surgery, and this is what I mean. Ben Salomon didn't want to be a dentist. Ben Salomon didn't want to be a surgeon. Ben Salomon wanted to end lives. Ben Solomon was so proficient with automatic weapons that for the longest time, he was an automatic weapons instructor for the Army. This is not some dork. You look a picture of him. He's even got glasses on and you think, gosh, look at this dork dentist who just turned out to be a stud. No, 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 no. You don't understand. Ben Solomon was highly trained with the use of weapons. Now let's get to one final little detail over this. He ended up being a surgeon and a dentist because that's kind of what the Army needed. It's where they needed him to go. Ben Solomon wanted to shoot. He wanted to be dug in. When he left the tent after he bayoneted two or three, shot a guy, bayoneted two guys and clubbed a guy to death. That's just in the tent. And there were more that happened in the tent. But when he sent his troops on and he said, you go, I'm going to stay back and hold them off. It talks about the gun placement he has and how he just, you know, 98 bodies were found around him. And yes, that's impressive. And yes, it's really cool. Here's a couple things that actually make the story cooler. When he was finally found, when they found his body, he had over 70 bullet wounds in his body. They tested him and they believe he took over 20 gunshot wounds before he died. 20 times. They kept shooting him and he wouldn't die. That's one. Two, he didn't just go to one gun placement and kind of closed his eyes and said a prayer and said, God, I'll see you soon, and just held the trigger until it was over. He kept changing places with his weapon like the highly trained beast he was. He'd throw down his machine gun and just let it loose with somebody. And then you'd want to move locations because whenever there's a heavy gun, they're going to focus their fire on the heavy gun. So he's shooting, he's moving, he's shooting, he's moving. He's just there finally doing what Ben Solomon was called to do. And that's send people to the shadow realm. I love that friggin' story so much, man. Gosh, what a beast. All right, enough. Let's talk about... You know, let's get to a couple emails before we get to these dirty, cheating Democrats in elections. Jesse, did any of your fellow recruits rat on your buddy that farted just moments before her inspection? He's talking about a story from Friday's show. Friday's show was a lot of fun. In case you missed it, they podcast every show, iHeart, Google, Spotify, iTunes. No, nobody ever ratted on him at all. Nobody says, thanks for making me laugh so hard it hurt. The boot camp memories came flooding back. Semper Fi. No, nobody ever ratted on him. I did have one buddy, though. I'm not going to do a story on this. I want to get to email back to politics and stuff like that. One buddy, I don't want to say his name. I about said his name. I don't want to say his name. But when he got to boot camp, he was too fat. And it was one of those things. He knew he was too fat. And it was part of the reason why he joined the Marines. He wanted to lose weight. He wanted to get in better shape. And you know how I told you they would, for whatever infractions you would have, they would make you go up on what's called the quarter deck, the front of the barracks, and they just thrash you there, push-ups and squat. You'd end up just collapsing from exhaustion and misery. He would purposely screw up so they would send him to the quarter deck so he could get in better shape. And no matter what, he would find ways. And it took 2 or 3 weeks before the drill instructors figured out that's what he was doing, that he was messing up on purpose because he wanted extra workouts. And then they changed tactics, as they always do, right? Because the purpose is to torture you. They changed tactics, and every time he screwed up, they'd punish all of us instead of him. And then we had to pull him aside one night and let him know that that's not going to, that needs to stop now. And he understood it. He got the message. Dear fashion icon, the other day you mentioned your waiter at Red Lobster was a commie trying to burn down the place. I feel like I speak for all listeners when I ask, did you tip the dirty commie and finance his communist existence? I had already tipped him by the time he said that. It wasn't my fault. Jesse, oh great geography oracle, I see all the conservative media in Texas, Arizona, and California. Why are there no images, videos, or reporters showing any of the illegal immigrants crossing Mexico to from New Mexico? Do people not know there is a border there too? Well, there is, but let me explain something about the border, because we'll get to this Laken Riley Act and some other things. Remember, the border, it has different sections, and don't think about those sections from an American point of view. All right. And here's what I mean. Don't think about our different sections of the southern border as being, okay, this is California. This is Arizona. This is New Mexico. This is Texas. That's the wrong way to look at it. You need to look at our border from the Mexican point of view, meaning the Mexican cartels, the different Mexican cartels from their point of view. You can, I'm sure you can look, go read Brandon Darby. How often do we have Brandon Darby on to talk about this stuff? Or look, other people write about it too. I'm sure there's a million maps you could probably pull up of the different sections of the border, different cartels control. There's not one Mexican cartel. There are many, 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 many cartels, and different ones control different areas. And what comes through on our border and where it comes through is largely determined by the cartel that controls that portion. Now, yes, it is controlled by our security forces, meaning, some years back in San Diego, here's a great example. Some years back in San Diego, they smartly put up a triple layer border fence. Have you ever been down to certain sections of the border down by San Diego, which I have, they have this sick looking border fence thing, and it just created a nightmare. Wherever you have one fence up, it's better than nothing. But the truth is, these guys are all experts. They get over those fences like it's nothing. They have different vehicles. They have different ways to get over. The double and triple layer border fences create real problems. Actually, they got this from Israel, Chris, because they have to secure their border for obvious reasons. I don't know why I just said Chris, like you're from Israel or something like that. I know how you guys stick together. Anyway, the double and triple layer border fences create a problem because it takes time to get in between the fences, and you have border patrol guys who can race up and down in between the fences. It just creates a logistical nightmare. Anyway, a while back, they put up this double triple layer fence in San Diego, and it didn't necessarily stop illegal immigration or really slow it down. But what it did do was it pushed it away from San Diego. They would go to other portions of the border because other portions were easier to get in. Now, that's part of it. Back to the drug cartel portion of it. Remember, not every cartel traffics in everything. We because we're simple people, I most definitely am, we simplify things too much, and we think of the cartel as if there's one, and we think each cartel or the cartel, they do all the stuff. That's not true. There are cartels who do this, not that. There are the Zetas forever were famous for this. The Zetas didn't really deal in drugs, and maybe they still don't. I don't know the latest on their leadership. They didn't really deal drugs like the others did. They dealt with humans. They view that as being more profitable, and so human trafficking was more their thing. That was a long way of saying your border, it's probably more as to do with what happens on the other side of it than your particular state. Plus, there are geographical considerations. If you live in a hugely mountainous area, that's not going to be as foot trafficked as much as a flatter area that's easy for women and kids to cross, that kind of stuff. All right. Moving on past illegal immigration, we'll talk about Democrats cheating in elections. Before we get to Democrats cheating in elections, why don't you stop cheating your dog? We're just talking about the food. I know you're good to your dog. I know you love your dog. They don't give you any choice. Big fluffy idiots just come and put their head on you, and they come running up to you and act like it's the greatest thing in the world whenever you're there. So we need to give them the best food we can give them. They need nutrition, and they don't get it from dog food. Dog food is dead food. It's like you give your dog a fast food cheeseburger every meal. That's what dog food is. Start pouring Rough Greens on your dog's food. Vitamins, minerals, omega oils, antioxidants, digestive enzymes. You'll see a difference in your dog's coat. My dog's digestive problems went away. You'll see a difference in his breath, how long he lives. Free jumpstart trial bags. Roughgreens.com/Jesse. That's roughgreens.com/Jesse or call 833-33-MY-DOG.
Fighting for your freedom every day. USA! USA! The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. Don't forget, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. All right, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this at all, but
we talk a lot about the low-T GOP and how the right, they don't want to accept, so much of the right doesn't want to accept what they're up against. We rant about this all the time. The communist is so clear-eyed about what he wants, who his enemies are, where he intends to go. I really admire that about the communists. They're so clear-eyed about that. The right just can't seem to wrap their minds around what they're facing. They can't do it. I actually still see people on the right say this. There's no cheating in elections. Well, the Democrats aren't cheating. Oh, shut up. And whenever they say that, they're always so dismissive of you or me, as if you're some stupid rube who just listens to these internet conspiracy theories. Listen, you can believe this election was stolen or that one wasn't stolen or whatnot. That's fine. You can argue about ballots or voting systems or all that stuff. Again, all that stuff is fine. We can have disagreements about those things. Those are perfectly acceptable disagreements to have. I believe this, you believe that, you believe whatever you want. But it is the most patently absurd position to take to say that they don't cheat in elections, that Democrats don't ever cheat in elections, because they practically admit it on camera. Democrats campaigning against voter ID or campaigning for more mail-in ballots, it's just an open admission that they want to cheat. That's all it is. Everyone can acquire an ID. Doesn't cost you anything. Every human being, doesn't matter the income level. Everyone knows where the DMV is. Everyone can go acquire voter ID. It's the easiest thing in the world. The only reason you would be against showing an ID to vote is because you intend to cheat in elections. There's not a second reason. There's not. Even their excuse for it. Well, it's racism. Even their excuse for it is so absurd they can't even say it with a straight face. The only reason you would not want someone to show ID to vote is because you cheat and intend to cheat more. The only reason you would want more mail-in votes is because you cheat in elections and you want to cheat more. There's not a second reason. Democrats cheat in elections. They tell you all the freaking time.
Today, in states across our nation, extremists pass laws to ban drop boxes, limit early voting, and restrict absentee ballots. In Georgia, extremists passed a law to even make it illegal to give people food and water for standing in line to exercise their civic duty and right to vote. I asked the friends here, Rev, whatever happened to love thy neighbor? The hypocrisy abounds.
There's only one reason you'd want more ballot boxes and more mail-in voting. You cheat in elections, and you would like to do more of it. That was Dome. This is the Attorney General of the United States of America. Remember, there's only one reason why you wouldn't want people to show ID. It's because you cheat, and you want to do more of it.
The right to vote is still under attack. And that is why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. That is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements. That is why we are working to block the adoption of discriminatory redistricting plans that dilute the vote of black voters and other voters of color.
That's the Attorney General of the United States of America announcing that Democrats cheat in elections, and he's going to do everything in his power to make sure they can do more of it. Period. End of story. Now, I will say this. Allow me to say this, and this will probably is probably going to be offensive. Maybe offensive to you. I don't care. It's true. You shouldn't campaign on cheating in elections. Independents hate it. Independent voters despise it. Doesn't matter how true it may be. You should never bring it up if you're running for office. If you're Donald Trump, you should never mention it again, ever. The words should never be on your lips. Stop talking about the stolen election. Stop talking about cheating in the elections, because independents don't want to hear it. So you shouldn't campaign on it, but it's still true. Of course they cheat. There's only one reason you wouldn't want voter ID. It's because you cheat and you intend to do more of it. All right? All right. Now, let's move on to some illegal immigration talk. But let's do some emails and some spending bill talk, because whew, we got a couple of doozies sitting side by side over here. And this one's going to hurt to hear. Might want to double up on your relief factor today. No, I'm kidding. Don't double up. Just take the normal amount. Remember, you should be taking your relief factor every day, whether it's joint pain, back, muscles, whatever. The aches and pains that come with life, you start taking Relief Factor, a drug-free, all-natural way to fight this stuff. You get relief from the pain, and you know you're not hurting yourself in the process. That's a problem. Every time you go grab that bottle of ibuprofen, yeah, it'll take the edge off for a price, right? But if we help our body fight inflammation naturally, then we can get relief from pain without wrecking ourselves. Call them. You don't have to take my word for it. I don't want you to. You shouldn't. That would be stupid. Try it. They sell 3-week quick start kits for $19.95. Try it. Call the number 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. Or go to relieffactor.com. All right? Relieffactor.com. Yeah, no, I'm sure this is the assistant AG. I'm sure she's all over making sure the voter integrity is top notch.
This Justice Department is deeply committed to racial justice and racial equity and ensuring that we have environmental justice for vulnerable communities is a part of that work.
Whew, frightening times. All right, some emails and debt talk and more next hour.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.